Chapter 32. February 14th of year 18. Today the four of us sit in the command module. I have decided I should no longer keep the data sent by the ISU's secret. Well, not completely. I won't mention to them that earlier I already saw pictures of the planet's surface. But all of us will look at the images sent by the two probes, which today will probably reach their point of closest approach to Proxima B. Of course, not actually today. The probes got there a few months ago. By now we can see both components of the double star system Alpha Centauri as the brightest stars in the sky. Proxima Centauri is still too dark for that, and the planet even more so. When the probes look backward now, they might see the same image as we do. It took so long, because the ISUs are always moving at the speed Messenger was traveling when they were launched. For a long time, this has been less than a fifth of the speed of light. I am watching the siblings. I often catch myself using this term, but strictly speaking, they are not related, even though they were born the same day. They have really turned out well. Being crowded in a tiny space for so long, and still ending up such reasonable people, is not something I could have definitely expected. For the sake of safety, the Creator even gave me permission to use lethal force, in case one of the children endangered the mission. In that instance, the incubation chamber would have tried to create a substitute through an accelerated process. However, I don't think I would have been able to kill one of the children, even in an emergency. Eve looks downward, shuffling her feet. This action causes her whole body to move in the zero gravity of the command module. Adam has his arms crossed and is sitting completely still, as if all of this does not concern him. I don't believe he really feels this way. The outer window is turning into a monitor screen, and this is an automatic reaction when new data arrives.
"Signal lock achieved,"
the computer voice says. At the same time, I feel how one of my memory modules after the other is filled. This time the yield seems to have been excellent.
"Looking good, kids,"
I announce.
"Don't call us kids, we're adults," Adam says.
Eve gives him an irritated look. First, the images must be verified using the checksum. We cannot risk any kind of harmful data entering Messenger. This test is performed by an algorithm I can neither modify nor cancel. The operating system will not display any unchecked data. Then something is happening on the screen. From top to bottom, an image starts building line by line. A photo. I hope this is not the picture I have already seen. For Adam and Eve, this will be their first view of their new home, a place where they will stay until they die. It is the darkly glowing plane I already know. Eve stands up in order to see every detail. Adam is also watching with rapt attention.
"Not exactly paradise," Adam says,
and Eve nods in agreement. Both obviously have not yet decided how to react. The disappointment seems to take a moment to reach their minds.
"Switch to next,"
a text on the screen reads. Apparently more images have been processed.
"Switch,"
I say. And the second image appears. The timestamp tells me the probe had flown farther, about 800 kilometers, I calculate from the time and speed data. Here the landscape looks quite different. The faces of Adam and Eve brighten, even though it is considerably darker here than in the central plains, because the sun stands overhead in an angle. Yet the ground is obviously covered by something other than hard rock. The ISU, the data indicates, took the picture from an altitude of about 3,000 meters, so we cannot clearly recognize what we are seeing. While Adam and Eve study the image, full of fascination, I run it through the spectral analyzer. I detect hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon. Everything indicates that the temperatures are lower there. The oxygen content of the air is still barely above 10%. But if the temperatures are correct, we can handle the rest. We are going to build respirators
that can first concentrate the oxygen in the air before delivering it to the wearer. 3% more should be sufficient, maybe 5, considering the greater physical exertions due to the gravity. The analyzer also finds strange lines I cannot assign to specific substances. They are not reflected but are being emitted. It is almost as if the ground, or whatever covers it, shines in certain frequencies.
There's something more, Adam says, interrupting my musings.
True, we are receiving a third image. This is a decent result, considering that the ISUs were intended for very different purposes and have not been designed for transferring data across such enormous distances.
Switch, I continue.
The automatic system needs my command, perhaps because I might want to manipulate the content of the image before showing it to my passengers. This will not be necessary. While taking the photo, the probe must have been crossing the terminator, the line separating the always lit side from the always dark one. 3 vegetation zones can be detected, an area about 300 to 100 kilometers before the terminator is covered by a dense forest zone. Beyond it, there is an ocean ring that seems to span the entire planet, containing a few small islands. And finally, about 50 kilometers after the terminator, there is a zone of eternal ice. We cannot see whether this is the continuation of the ocean in frozen form, or whether an ice-covered desert waits there for visitors. If the ocean covers the entire rear side, Proxima B would contain much more water than does Earth.
Wow,
Adam says. I haven't heard such an expression of enthusiasm from him for a very long time. Eve starts to turn the 3 photos into a schematic representation, a kind of map. I wonder where our greatest chances would be to find the inhabitants or what they left behind.
What do you think?
I ask.
Where should we look first for whoever sent the signal to us?
Definitely not in the central plane,
Adam replies. He is probably right, but we cannot discount any possible option.
There might be silicon-based life forms that would flourish in the conditions there, I add.
In the pictogram message, there were clearly creatures with 2 legs and 2 arms, and under those circumstances, such a shape would make no sense.
Good objection, Adam, I say. Is there anything else?
Eve sways her head and says, I would suggest the rear side. I am surprised at this and ask,
even though it is extremely cold there?
It is the place best protected against the Proxima Centauri flares, Eve says. If there is a civilization capable of sending such a message, it could also survive under extreme environmental conditions.
I wouldn't be so sure. Mankind is currently struggling with an added 2 degrees, and we at least made it here, I explain.
I know, Jay told us about it in a lesson, Eve says. Humans are really messed up. Not all beings have to be that way.
If she only knew how messed up some humans really are.
I hope she never finds out. Yet her arguments are valid, and even convince me. We definitely have to check the ocean.
Why should they stay in the ice when the great flare is long gone?
Adam asks, making a good point.
Right now it would be easier for them to survive in the steppes or the forest regions.
Maybe both of you are right, I offer. There might be individuals bored by living in the ice regions who now wander through forests and meadows.
I'm skeptical about one thing, though, but I decide not to share my worries with them. The signal, which the ship had been receiving for a short time, had disappeared again long ago.
That is too bad, because we could have used the radio beam for guidance during our approach.